Okay, we're entering the home stretch. Mishma Dave's passing. We'll be covering the last section of prayers. Mishma Dave's absorption. And thought of Krishna. Starting with text 40. Bhishma Dev says, close the door, please. That my mind be fixed upon Lord Sri Krishna, whose motions and smiles of love attracted the damsels. Oh, that's, I'm way ahead of myself. We'll go back. Text 36. Sorry. When Arjuna was seemingly polluted by ignorance upon observing the soldiers and commanders before him on the battlefield, the Lord eradicated his ignorance by delivering transcendental knowledge. May his lotus feet always remain the object of my attraction. Well, those of you that are familiar with this canto will please recall the despondency that Arjuna was feeling after Krishna's departure, and he came back to Hastinapur bearing this terrible news, and like what Bhishma Dev is doing here, Arjuna also did. He was just recalling the exchanges that he had with Krishna, and as he was recalling those exchanges, he realized that through the remembrance of Krishna, there was also the association with Krishna. And then when he remembered, like the pinnacle of all the remembrances, when he remembered Krishna's instructions to him on the Kurukshetra battlefield, he was feeling Krishna's presence. And he understood Krishna never left, because he very kindly provided his personal association through those instructions in such a way that just by remembering those instructions, he would feel Krishna's presence. So now this is Bhishma Dev's recalling the same, only from his perspective, not the perspective of the one who heard Bhagavad Gita from Krishna, but for the one who was witnessing that wonderful exchange of Krishna speaking to Arjuna. And the characterization that Bhishma Dev gives is that Arjuna was seemingly polluted by ignorance. Seemingly polluted because, as explained in the purport, not possible for Arjuna, an eternal associate of Krishna, to be in the same kind of ignorance like we are. Rather, it was induced by Krishna from within. So it's one of those philosophical questions that devotees like to ask sometimes. Was Arjuna in Maya? Or was it Yogamaya? And I heard Prabhupada answer it in both ways. And one time he said, when he was forgetting Krishna, he was in Maya. And when he was remembering his duty to Krishna, it was the internal potency. External potency, internal potency. But then, here we're understanding it's not, it was seeming delusion. It's quite a different thing when Krishna inspires one to go in a certain direction, and one just is in la-la land and goes in that direction. So we should never, even Arjuna's being covered with this identification with relatives and bodily identification, it's not the same. Arjuna's never in the same position as us, or we're never in the same position as Arjuna. So when Arjuna was seemingly polluted by ignorance, upon observing the soldiers and commanders before him on that battlefield, Prabhupada comments, he gives us a nice explanation, succinct explanation, of how battles were conducted. Unlike today, the battles were conducted in a remote place where no citizens would be harmed, and it was just the generals facing the generals, the commanders facing the commanders, the foot soldiers facing the foot soldiers, the chariot drivers facing the chariot drivers. You know, it's just kshatriyas facing kshatriyas. And there they were, face to face with one another, and whoever won was the ruler, and whoever lost was dead. And it was over. It wasn't this lingering thing. The lingering thing is the head of state is off in a little box somewhere looking at monitors and checking out the battle, and the Prabhupada uses the word mercenaries, the hired people, they're out doing the battle. People pushing buttons, firing rockets, and it's Kali Yuga. It's part of Prabhupada's direct expression, the way of democracy. The citizens had no business in seeing what was going to happen during such fighting. They were so removed from it that they didn't even know what was happening. The kshatriyas were having it out. He explains that the duty of the citizens wasn't to be on the battlefield, drafted by the military, by the government. You have to, conscription, it's called. You must serve with the government. You know, some countries have that rule. Israel and, small countries that are always battled. Every man, every boy that's born for some years must serve in the army. Doesn't matter if you're a kshatriya or not. Doesn't matter if you're a brahmana or vaishya or shudra or not. You serve in the army. It's Kali Yuga. Rather, Vedic times, the paying of taxes, it was a pretty stiff tax, one quarter of whatever it is that one earns. Of course, that was with agrarian society, so the king was the landholder, and since either the brahmana would receive charity or the vaishya, and the brahmanas weren't taxed, they were receiving charity, it's the vaishyas. The vaishyas were producing agriculture products, and one quarter of whatever they produced went to the king's treasury, and that was the wealth of the king. And then his duty with those taxes was to protect the citizens, not send them out on the battlefield, but to protect them. So their duty was simply pay their taxes. Prabhupada writes, apparently Arjuna's intelligence became polluted because otherwise there would not have been a chance to deliver the teachings of Bhagavad Gita for the good of all polluted conditioned souls engaged in material bondage by the conception of the false material body. Or another way of saying what Prabhupada just said was that Arjuna was placed in a condition where, like the conditioned soul, he appeared to be polluted, specifically polluted with the bodily conception of life. So Krishna speaking was to remove the bodily conception of life and put in its place knowledge of the soul. So this is why Bhagavad Gita is, out of the whole Mahabharata, so important. The frame of Mahabharata is morality and conduct, ethics, virtues to live by. And that's always important. But within the center of Mahabharata is knowledge of the soul. Or as Prabhupada writes at the last of this purport, Atma Vidya, or transcendental knowledge of himself, was primarily spoken by the Lord for the benefit of all concerned in all parts of the universe. Atmavidya, or knowledge of the soul and the supreme soul and their relationship, is for the removal of the ignorance of the conditioned soul. Atmavidya removes avidya. Light removes darkness. So we find in Bhagavad Gita that this is what Bhishma Dev was appreciating. When Arjuna was seemingly polluted by ignorance, upon observing the soldiers and commanders before him on the battlefield, the Lord eradicated his ignorance by delivering transcendental knowledge. May his lotus feet always remain the object of my attraction. This is his prayer, that my mind be fixed, that his lotus feet be always the object of my attention. Manmana. And he's giving us ways by which we can think of him, like how he thinks of him. And he's a Mahajan, so we follow. Just like the verses from the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that were quoted. In text 9 of chapter 8, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives a list of ways by which one can think of him. One should meditate upon the Supreme Person as one who knows everything, as he was the oldest, who is the controller, who is smaller than the smallest. So, you know, these are ways by which, what's smaller than the smallest? Krishna. Because the smallest is the atom and Krishna is within the atom. No one can be smaller than Krishna, greater than the greatest, at the same time. Maintainer of everything, beyond material conception, inconceivable, always a person, luminous like the sun. So these are ways to think of Krishna. So Bhishma Dev is giving us his ways of thinking of Krishna. I mean, there's only a few more verses left and he's going to stop, and that's the last that Bhishma speaks. So these are very poignant and powerful ways of thinking of Krishna. Now he's back on the battlefield, fulfilling my desire and sacrificing his own promise. He got down from the chariot, took up its wheel, and ran towards me hurriedly, just like a lion goes to kill an elephant. He even dropped his outer garment on the way. Nectar. Krishna. It was just fulfilling all of Grandfather Bhishma's desires. That's what this and the next verse is also saying. May he, Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead who awards salvation, be my ultimate destination. On the battlefield, he charged me as if angry because of the wounds dealt by my sharp arrows. His shield was shattered and his body was smeared with blood. Yuck. I mean, what kind of meditation is that? For Grandfather Bhishma, it's the sweetest of nectar. It's puzzling for one who doesn't understand the science of rasa, or doesn't understand the mood of Grandfather Bhishma, or doesn't understand the love that Krishna has for Bhishma. Krishna has, just like I explained earlier today, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, this learned scholar, was understanding what this exchange represents. It represents Krishna taking his promise and putting it down here, and putting Bhishma's promise up above his own promise. And as Prabhupada is explaining in the purports, if Bhishma was not Krishna's friend, like, you know, devotee, finished. Just like Krishna finished so many demons, just pow, sako, and he's gone. But Krishna didn't do that. And Bhishma saw Krishna as his worshipable Lord before and after the, like he's doing now, and during. So it's so amazing. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead charging at me with such fury. His chatter falls off and he doesn't even notice it. And he's charging like a lion to attack an elephant, ready to pounce on me. Blood smeared all over his body from the arrows that I've shot to pierce his body. Very unusual. But that's Bhishma's relationship. It's chivalrous rasa that Krishna enjoys. Because just like Jayant Vijay, who can fight with Krishna? So they prayed to the Supreme Lord, if you so desire, please engage us in such a way that we can be the ones who will give Krishna a good tussle. Just for his pleasure, if you so desire. So Bhishma was there. It was Krishna's happiness. So it looks like combat, but it's not. Again, Krishna understood Bhishma's devotion, and so it was rasa. It was lila. If he was not a devotee, it was not the attitude of serving Krishna with love and devotion by this fighting with him. Finished. Sudarshan Chakra, there he goes. Finished. Like Shishupal and so many others. Pondraka. Effortless. But instead he picks up the broken chariot wheel and as if angry from the arrow wounds. So I don't know of any situation, maybe there is a situation where Krishna is describing the happiness he derived from this exchange with Bhishma. But we're getting Bhishma's perspective on this exchange with Krishna. It's an exchange of love in chivalrous rasa with his own devotee, not with a non-devotee, with his own devotee. It's wonderful. By going through this very, very carefully and slowly, like, you know, repeatedly, like I'm doing, it helps one to get a perspective on the other rasas, because the last verse that we're going to cover this evening is Bhishma Dev's appreciation of the gopis. What to speak of his relationship with Krishna and Arjuna's relationship with Krishna, the relationship the gopis have with Krishna. He's going to invoke their mercy by glorifying them. Queen Kunti did the same thing. Queen Kunti, in her prayers, she went off in the direction of appreciating just one verse, but appreciating the love of Mother Jasoda. Because she, Kunti, also has parental affection towards Krishna. Motherly affection. But she could not fathom the love of Mother Jasoda. And Bhishma, is very much appreciating the relationship that Arjuna has with Krishna. So much affection is Krishna for Arjuna, he breaks his own promise. And for a Kshatriya to break their promise, you don't break promises, you keep promises. Krishna broke his promise to protect Arjuna. And Bhishma knew that Krishna would do that. And so he made a promise. Either Krishna will break his promise or I'll kill Arjuna. In the purport, Prabhupada briefly summarizes the Leela. Duryodhan criticized Bhishma Dev, alleging that he was reluctant to kill Arjuna because of paternal affection. A Kshatriya cannot tolerate insults on the principle of fighting. Bhishma therefore promised the next day he would kill all five Pandavas with special weapons made for that purpose. Duryodhan was satisfied, and he kept the arrows with him to be delivered the next day during the fight. By tricks, Arjuna took the arrows away from Duryodhan, and Bhishma Dev could understand that this was the trick of Lord Krishna. So he took a vow that the next day Krishna would have to take up weapons himself. Otherwise his friend Arjuna would die. So you know this, Leela, but we can hear it again. Duryodhana was needling. He was pressing Bhishma Dev. You're not fighting with full vigor. You're the greatest warrior on this planet. You could defeat everybody if you wanted to, but you're holding back. You're holding back because you have such affection for the Pandavas, you don't want to see them lose. And so I challenge you, O best of Kshatriyas. So Bhishma Dev accepted the challenge. All right. I'll tell you what. See these five arrows? They're very special arrows. With these five arrows, so now it's here comes the Kshatriya's vow. I will kill the five Pandavas. And you hold the arrows for me, deliver them to me in the morning. See you later, Duryodhan. And Duryodhan is gloating. Ha 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 ha, the Pandavas will be killed. Bhishma Dev took the vow and I've got the arrows. So Arjuna, Krishna being omniscient, knew about the whole scene, so he informed Arjuna and Yudhisthira. Bhishma Dev has taken a vow. Arjuna, I have an assignment for you. You go to Duryodhana's tent and remind him of the promise that he gave, that when you rescued him in a time of danger and difficulty, he promised that whatever it is that you desired, he would fulfill that. So when you remind him of that promise that he made long ago, and he offers, he will fulfill that promise, whatever it is, ask him for those five arrows. So when Arjuna went to Duryodhana's tent, Duryodhana was ready to give him the kingdom, whatever you want. No, I don't want the kingdom. I just want those five arrows. Ooh. So when Bhishma Dev extended his hand, okay, Duryodhana, where are the five arrows? Oh, Bhishma Dev, terrible thing happened. Arjuna came and asked me for the five arrows. Bhishma Dev took his vow. Krishna's trick. I made a promise. Krishna's taken away the arrows. Now I'll make Krishna break his promise. Either this or that. And he knew. It's Leela. He knew what Krishna would do. Krishna would break his promise. Krishna would protect Arjuna. So intensely, Bhishma fought to kill Arjuna. Krishna's driving the chariot this way and that way, because the chariot drivers are protecting the person in the warrior that they're driving, and protecting the warrior, skillfully moving the horses this way, that way. And Krishna is the best, right? He's the best. But Bhishma Dev's a powerful warrior. He received the benediction from Parashuram. You'd be the best fighter on the whole planet. So Krishna had to break his promise. Fulfilling my desire and sacrificing his own promise, he got down from the chariot, took up its wheel, and ran toward me hurriedly, just like a lion goes to kill an elephant. Prabhupada explains, apparently his determination was to kill Bhishma Dev, but factually, it was to please him as a great devotee of the Lord. Text 39. At the moment of death, let my ultimate attraction be to Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. I concentrate my mind upon the chariot driver of Arjuna, who stood with a whip in his right hand and a bridle rope in his left, who was very careful to give protection to Arjuna's chariot by all means. Those who saw him on the battlefield of Kurukshetra attained the original forms after death. 2 points. By taking the side of the Kauravas, Bhishma Dev was able to see Krishna from the front. Arjuna was only able to see Krishna from the back. Bhishma Dev was happy to be on the side he was on, just seeing Krishna driving Arjuna's chariot. This is his chivalrous rasa. And the other appreciation that although it appeared that Krishna was inimical to the Kaurava army, actually he was liberating them. By his glance, he diminished their life, but diminishing their life, he was freeing them from all their sinful reactions and bringing them to the liberated position. This is Krishna. Prabhupada says, this form, that's Krishna's form, which is 100% spiritual, I'm sorry, a spiritual form like the Lord's, either two-handed or four-handed, is attained by the devotees of the Lord, either in the Vaikuntha lokas or the Goloka planet, according to the original nature of the soul. This form, that's the Swarup of every living entity, which is 100% spiritual, is the Swarup of the living being, and all of the living beings who participated in the battlefield of Kurukshetra on both sides attained their Swarup, as confirmed by Bhishma Dev. So Lord Sri Krishna was not merciful only to the Pandavas. He was also merciful to the other parties because all of them attained the same result. Bhishma Dev wanted the same facility also. And that was his prayer to the Lord. Although his position as an associate of the Lord is assured in all circumstances. The conclusion is that whoever dies looking at the personality of Godhead within or without attains his Swarup, which is the highest perfection of life. Krishna's merciful. Although it may appear, hey, why is Krishna doing this? Krishna's merciful. The faithful understand it, and the non-devotees are scratching their heads. Then, text 40, let my mind be fixed upon Lord Sri Krishna. How many times has he asked for this benediction? Let my mind be fixed. His mind is fixed. And same, he's already liberated. He's fixed in his devotions, but he's praying to the Lord. At the moment of death, let my ultimate attraction be to Lord Sri Krishna. Let me achieve the Lord's eternal association. He's the Lord's eternal associate. But he's speaking like this in a humble way. Let my mind be fixed upon Lord Sri Krishna, whose motions and smiles of love attracted the damsels of Rajadham, the gopis. The damsels imitated the characteristic movements of the Lord after his disappearance from the rasa dance. Prabhupada's comment is Bhishma Dev's appreciation of the unique relationship that Arjuna had with Krishna is appropriate for Bhishma's position, but here he's going even further, recognizing that the gopis have the most intimate, the most confidential relationship with Krishna. The relation of the gopis with the Lord is still more praiseworthy because of their still more purified loving service. So this is perfect, more perfect, most perfect, that idea. Arjuna is perfect, but the gopis are even more perfect. And what is more perfect about them? The intensity of their love, the confidential dealings in their love. And he's making the statement that they're serving 100% on the same platform as the Lord. Bhishma Dev also remembered the gopis who were endowed with unrivaled opportunities by rendering loving service to the Lord. The gopis' equality with the Lord should never be misunderstood to be like Sayuja liberation, the equality of one of, excuse me, the equality is one of perfect ecstasy where the differential conception is completely eradicated, for the interests of the lover and the beloved become identical. So, it's the intensity of their love. Prabhupada writes, they achieved qualitative oneness with the Lord. So much so, they were so immersed in loving him that when he disappeared they broke all, Krishna said, you've broken all bonds to religious duty, you just abandoned it just by my calling you playing my flute. I cannot repay you. You'll just have to accept your own loving service as your repayment. But then when he left, they went mad because they're just totally attached to Krishna. And so, in the absence of Krishna, they just took the position of Krishna. And they started enacting Krishna's pastimes amongst all the gopis. They would play different roles and perform Krishna's pastimes. They attained qualitative oneness with the Lord by dancing with him on an equal level, embracing him in nuptial love, smiling at him in joke, and looking at him with a loving attitude. The exchanges, the intimate exchanges that even the goddess of fortune would never dream of. The gopis had that intimate association with him. So Bhishma Dev, the great warrior, just before parting from his body, is invoking the mercy of the gopis. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, just giving us this little signal. In Queen Kunti's prayers, we got that signal. Braja Prem is the most elevated. Here, Braja Prem in the mood of the gopis, just pray for their mercy. And this is Bhishma Dev. So in order to get hundreds and hundreds of times, Prabhupada described this, but in order to enter into the proper mood of appreciation of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, one needs to very carefully approach the lotus feet of the Lord through the first and second cantos and progressively absorb oneself in the message of each of the cantos before approaching the 10th canto. One will then be prepared, purified, and qualified to enter properly into the depths of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. Instead of hurriedly, cheaply, without qualification, trying to go there. ends with verse 49. So I think what I'm going to do, and the last set of verses, it's the mechanics of, he just shuts down and checks out. He does the yogi thing. He just amalgamates his senses into the mind and just like withdraws the whole apparatus and returns to the spiritual world. And everyone is silent. They go back to Hastinapur to pacify Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, and the chapter's over. So we'll end with this and see if there's some discussion. I know that there were some of you that wanted to ask some questions and we ran out of time. This afternoon you wanted to ask? Yes?
Discussing about the process, yeah. Yeah. Seven secondary.
The person generally has one primary
process. That general one. Each living entity has a primary process.
The way that it works, you're looking for the science of how it works. Secondary rasas is described. Sometimes take prominence, like an eclipse. So the primary is less observable, and the secondary takes prominence. But it's just for some time. And then withdrawn. All the while the primary is there, and the primary is giving life to the secondary. But the secondary takes some prominence. So dread, chivalry, so the secondary rasas take the predominant mood of the devotee. But like in Bhishma's case, it's in service to Krishna, because that's his rasa, dasya rasa. He serves Krishna in that way, and Krishna likes. Primary rasas are what? Fixed? Yeah. It's a secondary Krishna plays with. He moves them this way and that way. Not fixed. According to Krishna's desire. The primary, this is sthayi bhava. It's the essential quality of the soul. And then circumstances, in order to enrich Krishna's happiness, the invoking of different secondary rasas takes place. Like Rukmini, when Krishna was speaking with her, teasing her, I really shouldn't have married you. I'm not good enough for you. You should have married Shishupal. She's thinking, Krishna's going to leave. Dread. Just enhancing the conjugal rasa. What was the, so the question is how to deal with that? Is that, that's the extent of the question? Okay. Prabhupada was incredible. He could, in his presence, he could melt a stone. And stone-hearted people melted. But they were certain, my sense of what happened in Prabhupada's presence is because of his spiritual potency and the attraction that persons had for him as a spiritual personality and a spiritual potency. They were dependent upon his physical presence, and in its physical absence, it's not like they forgot him, but they, it was not within their capacity to continue in the same way. On the other hand, there were persons who did not have so much of Prabhupada's association, personally, physically, Bapu, but Vani. And those persons are still engaged in devotional service. Now, both those inspired by Bapu and those inspired by Vani, whatever service they did, that's their eternal credit. There's no loss, it's only gain, eternal gain for those persons. So what to do? Make sure that you very carefully study Prabhupada's teachings. Now, largely for the, within the society of devotees, there's not access to Prabhupada's Vapu, but only to his money. But there is access, like let's say, you know, some disciples of Bhakti Tirtha Swami became so enlivened in his association, and very powerful enlivener he was, but in his physical absence, not the same. So some of those persons are struggling. So the remedy in this situation is benefit from both, but of the two, Vani is more important. There's a devotee here in Vrindavan named Kurmarupa, Prabhupada disciple. He never, even once, was in Prabhupada's physical presence. He's been serving Prabhupada faithfully, steadily. He was a very staunch devotee, staunch brahmachari, his whole life as a devotee. Fixed. He never once had Prabhupada's physical association. Solid devotee. Very wonderful qualities, devotee, very talented devotee. He does a lot of the graphics works for their publications. But he does so many things. He's a very talented person. He taught in the Gurukul for years. When I knew him in New York, he was running a preaching center with new bhaktas, sending them out doing sankirtan. He's done so many very capable services. Fixed in the instructions. That's the remedy. Okay? Don't become fixed includes don't drift. Don't stray from knowing what the teachings are and living by the teachings. Just stay, like, you know, anchored or moored to the teachings. Live with the teachings, and you'll live with Prabhupada and his devotees, his loving servants. It's not related to the topic.
Is it regarding Ramanuja Parampara? Like, their followers say, like, if you do two things, once you take initiation from bona fide spiritual master of the Parampara, and if you don't worship demigods, and if one follows these two things, one can go easily to Vaikunth to Godhead without much endeavor. So, like, is that the teaching of Ramanujacharya?
There's following after the departure of Ramanujacharya, as sometimes happens, there was a split in his followers. One group taught, as you just said, I forget what the Sanskrit phrases are at the moment, but one group said that achieving Vaikuntha is like, the phrase is prapati, but there's another phrase that goes along with it. It's like the kitten who is carried in the mouth of the cat. All that has to happen is the kitten is born of the mother. And she just hangs out. The mother takes the kitten by the, I don't know if you've seen, by the back of the neck, and the kitten is just dangling, and the mother cat moves the kitten from place A to B and deposits kitten place B. Then there's another group that said no, effort is also required, like the baby monkey. The baby monkey has to hold on to the mother monkey, and the mother monkey moves to place A to B, and baby monkey moves with the mother to place A to B. So this group that you're referring to says you just need this initiation and worship Vishnu and not worship other than Vishnu. You can do anything else. Now, it's just not exactly anything else. But so then there's divisions that some even go so far as to say anything else. It's like, you know, a group of Christians that say you just have to say these words: I accept Christ as my Lord and Savior, and you can do anything you like. You're going to heaven. Because it's by grace alone, not by works. That's this theological issue. Grace or mercy, descending mercy. So you get the mercy of the jeer who performs the diksha and just worship Vishnu, and that's it. It's your ticket. And they have faith in that. They teach it. And that's not the teaching of the other group of Sri Vaishnavas, and it's not the teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We must make effort. And there's, you know, there's vidhis of vidhi sadhana bhakti. They're there in the scripture. So we follow them. Bhishma Dev, live by theistic conduct and worship the Supreme Lord, and certainly is one of the teachings of Ramanujacharya, serve the Vaishnavas. Anyway, it's nice, but it's not complete. And it becomes, the theology becomes very ritualistic. And mechanical. Pranipat, Prashna, and Seva are the components. Right? So how to cultivate? Pranipat, Prashna, and Seva. That's how you cultivate. Someone else? Anupam, you have? No. Yes. Your voice was going down to the paper and not to my ear, so I couldn't follow what you were saying. Okay, here we are. Lord Sri Krishna inspired Yudhisthira Maharaj to ask Bhishma Dev in the presence of many great sages, indicating thereby that the Lord's devotee, like Bhishma Dev, although apparently living as a worldly man, is far superior to many great sages, even Vyasadeva. So, question is, okay, the other sages, but why also Vyasadeva?
Yes.
Well, it's like, you know, Shukadev Goswami was the speaker of the Bhagavatam, and in the audience included Vyasadeva, his teacher and father. So Krishna is putting the spotlight on Bhishma Dev because he was not only learned, but he was practically executing those duties, guiding the Pandavas. So it's again, it's rasa, or it's lila. It's grandfather's passing. Grandfather Bhishma's passing. Krishna's putting the spotlight on him. Included, you know, the guest list is long. Any one of them, they're great personalities. Included in the list is Vyas. Spotlight goes on Bhishma Dev. Krishna wanted that. It's Bhishma Dev's passing. Spotlight goes on Bhishma Dev. That's my understanding. It's not to say, it's not that Prabhupada is indicating Bhishma Dev should have compiled the Vedas, not Vyasa, because he was more qualified. That's not what he's saying. That's my understanding. My understanding is Krishna wanted, one of Krishna's purposes was, he inspired Yudhisthira from within his heart to ask Bhishma Dev. The purpose of that was to demonstrate indicating thereby that the Lord's devotees, like Bhishma Dev, although apparently living as a worldly man, is far superior to many great sages. So although he's in a worldly position, Vyasadeva was not. He's in a literary and brahmana detached position. Honor goes to Bhishma Dev. Honor can go to Vyasadeva in another circumstance. Something else?
In the morning class, we discussed that unsteadiness in Krishna consciousness is due to maintaining other desires.
In the morning class, we discussed that the failure to advance in Krishna consciousness is maintaining material desires.
Yes. And also having some fruitive tendencies,
yes,
while executing devotional service.
Yes.
We try to fight with it, we try to overcome it, but sometimes it seems really difficult and they come back again and the future in devotional service seems very bright.
What to do? Mom directly in Krishna's instructions.
Mama eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarati. So like this Sri Vaishnava question, it's we must make some effort, but we're dependent upon mercy. So go to the mercy side. Krishna, that stopped the effort. But while making the effort, Krishna, depending on Krishna, surrendering to Krishna, relying upon Krishna, Krishna, mayam etam tarantite. It's Krishna's energy that we're struggling with. Krishna's in charge of Krishna's energy. If Krishna says, okay, Maya, back off. Wow, what happened? The struggle went away. Krishna. And That's one of the glories of Krishna. It's the realization, the emphasis I've been making, Prabhupada has been making, I'm just amplifying it, is that through the medium of devotional service, one manifests the glories of Krishna. Krishna manifests himself through the medium of devotional service. So we need to struggle against this long-standing word I used before, baggage, sense gratification, mental speculation, fruitive aspirations. Man, it's a drag. We make efforts and we depend. So it's these two things. That's our Vaishnava teaching. depend upon Krishna. Engage in your prescribed duties and always think of me. That's right in those verses from the 8th chapter. Effort and mercy, both. We won't get there without mercy. We won't get there without making some effort, just like, wait, okay. Krishna, please pick me up. I'm this kitten just waiting for you. Okay, here's person A was brutally hurt by person B. Person A believes in God, but doesn't go to temples all that often. But person B, though a non-believer, goes to the church because person B's mother takes person B there. Will person B learn his lesson? Or is God going to welcome him with open hearts into heaven? Aside from the A and B thing, if doing something in a mechanical way, in a ritualistic way, that's not going to carry one to the spiritual world. If we do something in a mechanical way or routine way, there is certainly benefit. One will be benefited to a certain degree, at least, through the modes of nature, and depending upon that degree, it may be beyond the birth on earth and the human species. It may be in a heavenly realm, but it's not the kingdom of God. So because generations of persons do something, and you follow those generations of persons that do something blindly, one isn't going to get the full fruit of religious or spiritual practice. When I read Prabhupada's books, I share whatever inspiration I get from the books. But what is the reason behind my sharing, I don't understand. I want to get some appreciation that how nicely I can present the message of Prabhupada's books. So that's just honesty. And most people have that same condition. It's just, you know, it's part of our baggage. And how to deal with like that? You just take your baggage and dump it. And go forward with striving, like this question earlier, striving for just being in the mood of service. And just continue to strive in the spirit of the mood of service. Not the fruitive intention is I get some perks. I get some recognition, a pat on the back, and people think, oh, this person's good. They can do this really good. And then we get some kind of ego boost from the whole thing. So that's material contamination. Devotees understand I have material the beginning stage. I have contamination. That's my condition. And I want to become free from that contamination. So let me just stay in this humble mood. You strive and strive, and Krishna helps. Question: how to understand in daily life if by one's activities one is pleasing the spiritual master or not? Well, one way is to ask. But if that's not so easy to do for one reason or another. You can look inside. And from inside, evaluate these two things. One, am I trying? My capacity may be very small, but whatever my capacity is, big, medium, or small, according to my capacity, am I trying to act? If the answer is yes, I'm trying. My capacity is very small, but I'm trying. Then the answer is you're pleasing the spiritual master. Then another question to ask is, while I'm trying, am I thinking I'm dependent upon Krishna to be successful in this effort of trying? If the answer is yes, more pleasing or additionally pleasing. I'll say the same thing in a different way, but it's the same thing. Something that I personally communicate to devotees on a regular basis is that it's not your service or your Krishna consciousness is pleasing if your trajectory on the spiritual path is way up here, meaning that if it's down here, you know, you lost. You're not, it's not pleasing, it's not acceptable, you're just a bum. You got to be up here or you're not pleasing. That's a wrong idea. Whatever the position in your spiritual trajectory, however many lifetimes you've been working at it, and so you're here or here or there, whatever it is, if from that position there's a conscious acting in that relationship, that's pleasing. Because one who acts, it's like this comment I made earlier today, that those devotees that make progress in Krishna consciousness, clear progress, is their relationships with their spiritual authorities is strong. So when the relationship with the spiritual master, whatever it is something that you're consciously acting within that relationship, that's pleasing, and one will advance. It's not how high. It's sincerely acting within that relationship. So, built within that statement is there's some anticipation, there's faith, and there's some anticipation of mercy through that relationship. It's one of the things that holds one in that relationship and nurtures the relationship is the mercy that comes. And when one's mercy vessel fills up, whoa, it's encouraging. It's confirmation. This is a good relationship. This is a relationship I want to stay within. And I can add one more item, and that is, with gratitude, let me give back. But that's, you know, that requires some maturing in Krishna consciousness. With gratitude, I've received so many merciful situations or exchanges or gifts. Let me express my gratefulness and offer. The person who benefits is the person who makes the offering, not the person who receives the offering. You know, the palmful of Ganges is offered to the Ganges. The Ganges doesn't need a palmful of Ganges. But the person who makes the offering gets benefit. So there's a third criterion. And that's a more, from my observation, a more mature stage. Although it's pretty basic, it's still a more mature stage where there's feelings of gratitude, and with feelings of gratitude one offers something. Some service, some something. But it's with the emphasis is not on the service, it's the emphasis is on the feeling of gratitude. Because when that feeling of gratitude is there, it's pleasing to the spiritual master, because the spiritual master knows those deeper spiritual sentiments are now stirring in the heart. And that's the goal. That's what the teacher wants to give the student, it's what the spiritual master wants to give to the disciple, is that the deepening of spiritual feeling. Genuine spiritual feeling. It starts stirring with gratitude. Seeing other devotees' relationship with our spiritual authorities, I feel envy. I find my relationship weak and also do not feel like interacting much. As we are and will be having physical association in the coming days, I desire to utilize the opportunity. What steps should I take? Same three things. Pranipat, Prashna, and Seva. It's not a long list. And it's not an expensive list, and it's not difficult list. But all three are from the heart. Submission, the right kind of inquisitiveness is not just blah blah blah, but it's something that's, you know, touches your heart, something that's meaningful for you. And then the third is when you hear the response, like there's been a number of questions from a number of people. When you hear the response, you act on it. That's seva. Seva is not just, you know, something that requires the physical presence, like, you know, do some little physical service. Drive the car, or get the shoes, or prepare the lunch, or some, you know, those are nice sevas, but the more pleasing seva is the things that are going to, in a critical way, help you advance. You hear what those things are and you do them. That's seva. So, and that's a way of cultivating, this person's question, cultivating opportunities for that relationship, deepening that relationship. Okay. Last question. Go ahead. Yes.
People are not the devotees when
people are not devotees.
Certain people who are not devotees and have treated the trolley, they have exploited me. The people who are not devotees have exploited me as an innocent.
I don't follow this. There's people who are not devotees and they've insulted a devotee.
Exploited the devotee. Exploited you. This is the person A, person B question? Yeah, kind of, okay.
So, I have a strong feeling of revenge for them.
That's in the data.
As principal, I know, but
forgiveness.
Okay. Forgive. Motive goodness. Dump this motive ignorance. Find a river somewhere and throw it in. Walk away. Motive goodness. And, you know, do it on an instruction. Or another basis of doing is, if you had harmed, if the role was reversed, would you want someone to forgive you? So, as you would like others to do to you, you do to others. It's called the golden rule. If you, you know, in real practical terms, if you would like other people to be forgiving of you when there's some transgression, you invoke that energy coming your way by doing that in your life with others. What goes around comes around. You understand? That can work the other way. If the other way is, I want revenge, I want to get back. They did me bad. I'll show them. You get that mindset and you're inviting the energy of people getting back at you. Just how it works. Makes sense too. But that is how it happens. And you become situated in the quality of goodness, which is part of which is forgiveness. Goodness comes your way. Be situated in goodness, or would you like to be situated in ignorance? If you want to be situated in goodness, act in goodness. Forgiveness. There's these cliches, to err is human, to forgive is divine. To be divine. Do it, just do it. Cultivate it. Decide, I'm going to do it. I'm going to forgive. No, not that kind. Forgive. Clean. Forgive. It feels different when you forgive. And then you're not protecting yourself. You're protected by the quality of goodness. The other is false ego, and the other is God consciousness. Choose it. It's that simple. You know, then there's this question over here. I'm struggling. Just surrender to Krishna. Struggle's over. Just surrender to Krishna. Is it that easy? It's that easy. Oh, I'm going to struggle. Okay, go ahead and struggle. It's a choice, though, if you go ahead and struggle. Okay, I forgive, but first I want to get back at this guy because I can't get it off my mind. I want to get back. I want to... Then I'll forgive. No, it doesn't work that way. You act that way and you get some more energy coming your way. That's how it works. You involve yourself in the modes of nature and you're entangled in the modes of nature. That's how it works. It's as simple as choosing. You choose and you surrender. Now, once you surrender to Krishna, you may choose to act in such a way you're rendering a service to this other person. You know the story of Narada and the serpent? Once upon a time, there was a serpent. And the serpent got Narada's association. So this Narada trained the serpent in such a way he should just be engaged in devotional service. So he engaged in devotional service. And then the children saw that, oh, he's just like become very passive. So they started tormenting the serpent. So the serpent, next time he saw Narada, said, it's tough being this nonviolent serpent because these kids. Then Narada said, well, I never said you couldn't show your hood. Just don't strike. So, in service, not like I'm going to keep this guy off my case, but in service, in the mood of service, what is appropriate action I can do that can help this person come closer to God? If you think like that, Krishna will give you the inspiration what to do, and circumstances will configure themselves in such a way it becomes possible. That it won't become possible as long as you're implicating yourself in actions or reactions of material activities. You become part of the problem. When one relies upon Krishna, the internal potency of Krishna takes over. Don't believe it? Then you're in the external potency, struggling. Duratyaya. Srila Prabhupada.